And greetings and salutations, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Curtain Call, where I spotlight the magic of theater one conversation at a time. On tonight's show, I'm going to be featuring two familiar faces from our local theater community. They're going to step out from behind the characters we know and give us a chance to meet the people beneath the costumes, beyond the scripts, and away from the stage lights. Lexi McEntee and Thomas Cambridge have both become familiar presences on stages throughout our region, but there is just so much more to each of them than the roles they play. We're going to talk about the experiences that shaped them, the paths that brought them to the theater, and the very different productions waiting for each of them this coming fall right here in our community. Then later on in the show, take your seats, because it's another episode of
The Roving Thespian.
That's me. And that will be followed by a look at the productions still playing in our community. Summer may be waning, and the final curtain is already approaching for some of these terrific shows, so this may be your last opportunity to catch them before they disappear into the wings, so to speak. So, let the house lights come down once again as the spotlight shines on two fabulous artists. And for once, neither one of them has to memorize a single line. Settle in, because the conversation begins right now. Guests tonight, I have to say, they've taken very different roads to arrive at the same place, life in the arts. Lexi McEntee is an actor, writer, filmmaker, teacher, and intuitive healer. A graduate of the NYU's Tisch School of the Arts, she trained with Atlantic Theater Company, studied and performed in Paris, and worked in television, film, voiceover, and theater. Since making the Upper Delaware Valley her home, she has become a familiar face through her work with River Rep Theater, Farm Arts Collective, Standing People Together, and a number of independent film projects. And joining her on the show tonight is Thomas Cambridge. Thomas's career has spanned technology, finance, executive leadership, nonprofit service, improvisational comedy, film, and theater. So today, in addition to an extensive list of stage and screen credits, he also serves as the executive director of Growing Older Together, an organization dedicated to helping older adults remain connected, engaged, and independent within their communities. We're going to talk a lot about that, too. I think it's a very important part, not only of Thomas's life and the work he does, but also in our community. I really want to focus in on that. Tonight, we're going to learn more about the people behind the performances. Lexi, Thomas, I want to welcome you both to Curtain Call.
Thank you.
It's good to be here, Tom. Thank you.
Thank you. Both of you come from various backgrounds to arrive at where you are today. As we mentioned in the introduction there, very varied, different backgrounds. Neither of you seem to be defined by a single one of those backgrounds. How did you arrive, or has that, I should say, all that history that you both have, how has that informed you as actors? And I'm going to take it to Lexi first. I'll let you answer that, and then we'll bring it over to Thomas. So go ahead.
Sure. It's a really great question, because I think as an actor, your life experience is essential to be able to do the art form in general, right? Mm-hmm. So I think your journey, your unique journey, informs the stories that you're able to tell, right? It informs how you express yourself. It informs your knowledge, because as an actor, you draw on all of that experience to be able to give a truthful performance, right? So you don't necessarily need to have a background in a lot of acting training. You just need to be able to draw upon the truth of what you've experienced and be able to express that, I think, in my opinion, seen.
It makes total sense. It's the many parts create the person.
Sure.
You know, and you have, again, as I say, announced in the introduction there, from working in France, from your healing work as mm-hmm. well, all of that, so then you're saying informs when you develop a character is something that you can draw from.
Oh, absolutely. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And my acting work informs my healing work because I'm...
Good point.
Listening is very important to be able to communicate with people, not just on stage, right? So being able to listen with an open heart and an open mind in kind of all of the aspects in what I do has just been really integral in being able to grow and develop in all of the avenues that I work in.
Sure, sure.
Yeah.
So, Thomas, the same for you. Again, very varied career. I mean, corporate America, for one, leadership, executive roles, and then working in our community to help elderly people find a way to eat, to get to places, that sort of thing. We're going to talk more about that later on because I want to hit on the volunteerism. That's a very important part of what you do there. So how has that informed your work as an actor, which is also very varied?
Well, I think if I could step back just a little bit to where I grew up, mm-hmm. which was Amarillo, Texas. That is a mecca of cattle and oil. And it's my only perspective because it's where I grew up. But I believe that it is a high concentration of very colorful characters. And without even knowing it as a child, I guess you would say I imitated them. Whether they were men or women, if they were very dramatic, I was drawn to that. And without even realizing it, I was doing character study.
Wow.
And I carried that through my junior high and high school years. And I wanted to do that in college. My father wanted me to go into the oil business because that's what he did. And I didn't do that, but I wound up compromising and getting a business degree.
Okay.
And moving to New York City, which I did quite a long time ago, of course, also a high concentration of very colorful characters.
Yeah, certainly.
So I just went from one place to another, and I was able to absorb all these different personalities. And so my observation of how people act, how they speak, how they carry themselves, that never stopped, even though I went into corporate America. Mm. When I finally moved into acting, which was only 13 years ago, officially, I quit my corporate job in 2010, and it took me 2 years to finally realize I wanted to pursue one of my dreams in life, which was to become an actor. And so I carried all of those characters with me. I guess I had some sort of an inventory somewhere in my brain. And I enrolled in the Upright Citizens Brigade and started with improvisation, which also there's great opportunity there for all kinds of characters to come out. Now, in terms of my work with Growing Older Together, I would say I've certainly learned more about compassion. And also about aging. I think it's just a respect and an appreciation for the more we move through life, if you are given opportunities like I was to pursue a dream like acting, that I would hope that gratitude comes out in other ways in terms of a performance even. And so I was able to take my professional attitude in finance and technology and basically just overlay it onto my creative endeavors. And I certainly don't want to disparage creative people, but I think a lot of folks who don't come from a more structured background, sometimes it's harder. It's more of a challenge to have that sort of discipline. I'm not talking about the artistic discipline, but the business discipline to bring to the artistic endeavor.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But the power of observation and absorbing, of seeing different people, different characters, and really watching them and seeing them and seeing what their habits might be, seeing how they hold their body, seeing how they speak. I know you've dealt a lot in dialects too, Tommy, in some of the productions that you have done. So the power of observation is very important in how we almost act like a sponge, I think, as actors in observing people and how they act and being able to bring that to the stage when you develop a character. So my point, though, was that both of you have such a varied career other than acting, and are able to bring those pieces in somehow to your creative process.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. So that's important for any actor to understand, I think. Tom, you've also spent your life repeatedly reinventing yourself. Was that intentional to pick up all these different aspects of your life and to eventually develop a Thomas Cambridge as we know him?
I think wherever I have gone, some things have certainly been more enjoyable and feel more natural to me, like performing, acting, and writing. Mm-hmm. When I was in the corporate world, I enjoyed being a part of something. I spent 5 years in night school going to New York University to get a master's in finance. I never felt authentic, but I felt I needed to do it to get wherever it is I was going next. And my managers had also encouraged me to do such a thing. I actually now get to use that degree quite a lot, running Growing Older Together,
I'm sure. Yeah.
Writing grants and putting together budgets and that sort of thing. But I didn't really have the passion in the corporate world, but I had acceptance that this is where I am right now. So I might as well be as good as I can be, which is one, another reason I went into night school to get that degree.
Yeah.
But it's, so I threw myself into whatever it was, whether I really enjoyed it or not, enjoyed it as much as some other things, I would say.
So what was the turning point for you then in 2013?
It was exasperation, I guess, or I could even say burnout. Let's call it that.
Okay.
And I'd worked for a large European financial institution, UBS, for 25 years. And I had moved up fairly significantly into senior management. But just like most of the other organizations in the financial world, in 2008, there was a huge crash.
I remember.
Yeah. And I had a job as the chief of staff for a large division of workforce management, which really meant layoffs. And I ended up running the conveyor belt of layoffs for my division for 2 years. And that included names of people that I was very close to. And that really ate at me.
Oh, boy.
Because you would see people who had hopes and dreams and they just bought a house. And I'm thinking, oh, my God, and you're on the list. And I didn't like that part of my job. And I finally just one night had enough, literally. I had a moment of realization.
Yeah.
That I don't have to do this. I have given it plenty of time, the old college try and then some. So if I want to do something else, I think it's okay.
Yeah.
I had no idea what it was going to be. I just knew I couldn't do that anymore.
Got it.
And I went in that following Monday and said to my boss in Switzerland, I'd like for you to put my name on that list, please.
Wow.
And he said, okay. So I got laid off, which meant I got a package. So I had a nice little buffer. It wasn't like I was just left without
sure.
any sort of resources. And I moved up to my house in Coshecton and looked for inspiration. Didn't find it. Ended up moving back to New York. And I had met this woman who ended up becoming a spiritual advisor. And it didn't happen right away. But she opened up my eyes to just saying yes to things and asking me, if God had a plan for you, what would it be? And I said, well, to be an actor. Mm. And she said, well, why aren't you an actor? I said, I don't know. And she said, why don't you become an actor? And I said, okay. And the following Monday, I enrolled at the Upright Citizens Brigade because comedy is what I wanted to do.
Sure.
And that was January of 2013.
That is an amazing story, isn't
it? That's one. Wow.
That's something else. I mean, that's just like that. The realization, why asking that question, that's what it took.
Yes.
That question, why won't you do it? So then right. you move. So then you're in New York City. You join that group, that troupe,
mm-hmm.
and you started out with improvisational theater. So we'll get more to that in a second. So we'll go now back to Lexi. Was the transition for you, or was there never a transition? Was the theater arts always a part of who you were?
Well, I think the life of an actor, there are ebbs and flows of things. Some actors, right out the gate, they have a full-blown career and they're going.
Mm-hmm.
But for many of us, it's not like that. For me, it was a journey of how do I want to express myself? What is my version of what I want to put out in the world artistically, right? So after college, I took some time. I lived in Paris for a while trying to gather what I was going to do. And I eventually landed back in New York City. I did some auditioning, some acting, but then I actually turned more towards writing. I became really interested in writing, specifically films. I wrote a short film with one of my best friends from college. And we wrote that film. We ended up thinking, well, why don't we get it produced and shoot it? And we did that. And that was a wonderful experience. Because as an actor, especially at that age, you don't have the view of what the whole machine is like. You're very much a cog mm-hmm. in the machine. And to be able to see something through from the beginning to the end that was your artistic expression gave me a whole different viewpoint of what this art can be and how much control you can have. And I learned that through that experience. And then I took that through the rest of my career because I was like, I don't want to be an actor who has no control over my life or my career or what happens next for me. I want to be able to control things and decide, right? And it's not about success, how successful I'm going to be. I want a career that's purposeful, a career that I love, a career that I feel like I'm fully participating in and that I'm steering, right? Not that I'm being steered.
Right. So that's a wonderful perspective because I think a lot of actors don't realize that. They really do think that they're kind of bounced around to whatever fate allows and they don't have control over their career. Again, thinking in terms of a business and making choices and choosing projects that are important to you, like you did with your film. You're going to be playing Emily in Our Town. Mm-hmm. We'll talk about that a little bit more later. But when you approach a play, what is it you're looking for in that script that fulfills you, that fills that need, that advances that career or keeps that control that we've talked about?
Sure. Yeah. And so just to back up a little bit, even to answer your question, too, I am a little selective with what I do. And mm-hmm. even with other auditions I get, I still have an agent and sometimes they send me auditions, but often I say no if it's not something that I feel like I want to be doing, which is like really taboo to say. But I think because I've been blessed to have a fulfilling life in other ways.
Yes.
I know where my priorities are. So, and I know where I want to focus my energy and I know what's important to me. And so going back to your original question about when I'm reading a script or when I'm trying to decide what to do, it's really important to me that the material's good, like an interesting, well-written piece, that the characters are interesting, that there's something being said about the story, that the dynamics between the characters are interesting. I look at all that, not just with my role, with the other roles too in the piece too.
Good point.
Because it's not just me, it's all of us who are working together on something, sure. Create this thing. So I look at that and yeah, if the role is interesting, if it lights me up, I feel like if I read a script and I start like saying the lines or like how I would, then I know I'm interested.
You know. Okay,
yes.
You start embodying the character right away.
Yes, and I'm like, how would I do this? How would I say this? How does this feel? So that's how I know. Yeah.
That's neat. And Thomas, you've worked in many mediums, certainly television, film. We mentioned improvisational comedy, theater, of course. What do you find the most challenging? Which one, I should say?
I would say that live theater is the most challenging just because it requires the most rehearsal. Mm-hmm. You basically have to commit the entire performance to memory. And in order to do that, there should be a lot of rehearsals. And I really appreciate it when I'm in a production that commits to lots of rehearsals. So I would say that that's absolutely the biggest challenge. But it's also more rewarding because you don't get applause.
Yeah.
When you do camera work.
Yeah, yeah. You don't get immediate feedback.
Exactly.
You get to
and
see.
And that's a thrill.
That is a thrill. That is. Mm-hmm. But is certainly a challenging part is learning lines. Because when you learn lines, you're not just learning your lines, right? To understand what's happening in the scene. Mm-hmm. You have to have a comprehensive view and understanding of what's being said. Because every performance should be different.
Yes.
Every performance that you have on stage, even though you have rehearsed it for hours upon hours and hours. Mm-hmm. And so you, Lexi, responding to Thomas, if you're on stage together, have to be able to respond in a way that makes sense. You're not just reading your lines back to him. So it comes down to that listening and how important that is. Yes, Thomas, you're going to...
The performance needs to be its own living being.
Mm-hmm.
And I had a great coach in New York City, Penny Templeton, who told us, learn your lines, learn your character, and then when it's time to perform, throw it all away. And our director, Christopher Pedido, mm-hmm. with the River Rep Theater Company, told us the same thing.
Yes, he does.
In the show that Lexi and I just finished up with Tomorrow Today. I think it was our first performance. He's like, okay, you've done all the work, throw it away, and have fun.
Yeah.
And that's very important advice.
Great. Mm-hmm. But when a director says that to you, Lexi, how does that make you feel? Does it open you up and say yes? Or is it like, what?
Well, it's a really important reminder because I think as an actor, of course, you know, you want to be able to be loose during the show. You don't want to come in to a scene and be like, I know exactly how this is going to go and I know exactly what I'm going to do.
That's what I mean. Yeah.
I think it's important to have structure to know you don't want to get on stage and like forget where you are and everything you're doing. But it's important to trust the structure you've built, right? You've done the character work, you've
done
the
homework.
Lines, right? And it still lives in you. Like that homework doesn't like go away. It doesn't fly out the window. So it's not like forgetting it completely. It lives within you. But because it's so embodied, you don't have to think about it. It's already who you are when you step on that stage. So that gives you the freedom to play. You've built the engine. Mm-hmm. So all you have to do is just run with it. And so that could take you to unexpected places, right? And that's the idea. Is that when you're in a scene and you go someplace unexpected or you get off the beaten path, that's when it becomes exciting. That's not just for you, but for the audience.
Yeah, it becomes a real adventure.
Yes.
Yeah, it does. I love that Chris gave that direction to throw it all away. You've done the homework. You've done the work. Let's move on and let's enjoy the process. Tomorrow Today was a great production. I very much enjoyed that. It was written by Chris's brother, Paul, and Chris adapted it for the stage. I'm sure he had some writing elements in it too, but I just found it amazing. You did bring some of your comedy to it, Thomas, in playing the bot. Was that the name of the character? Was the
Jokebot 3000.
Jokebot 3000. Mm-hmm. Yes. So it was a lot of fun, but I really appreciated the work that went into it because you guys really were outstanding throughout the show, all of you. That's very much an ensemble piece. Yeah. When you think about it, even though there were little vignettes, and I'm sure they rehearsed that way, but the whole thing kind of came together. Those vignettes were sewn together very well. So very much enjoyed that show. So again, a lot of your background really informs Lexi and Thomas of what you have become as far as performers on today's stage. You studied now French. You mentioned that you were in Paris for a while.
Yes.
And are you teaching French now, too?
Yes, I am.
There's a sign at the end of our road that says French lessons.
Yeah.
And I was wondering, who the hell is teaching French lessons in Beach Lake, Pennsylvania?
Me.
And I found out it was you. So how has that translated your work in Paris? You spent there as an actress.
Yes.
What have you used for informing your work here in the States?
Well, it's interesting. The work I did there was definitely more experimental theater.
Oh, all right.
Which I hadn't really done up to that point in my career. So that was in itself just an interesting medium to work with and different for me. It definitely got me out of my comfort zone. And you get to see sides of yourself as an actor that's really interesting. And that also just informs what you bring to your work in general.
Mm-hmm.
But being in Paris, oh my goodness, what an amazing place to be. I fell in love with it right away. I didn't want to leave. Just the culture there, their love of life and the ease at which they experience life. And I think that slowness or ease of life I've definitely kept within my heart. Like it's normal to be gentle with yourself. It's normal to take moments slow, right? And you can also say that for informing not just my life, but how I approach acting. In terms of like just paying attention to where and when I have too much urgency, right? Where can we like dial down,
nice. Yeah,
right?
I got it, sure.
So yeah, it was an amazing experience. And then from that, I fell in love with the language and speaking French or being able to understand the language is very connected to acting because it's a listening skill, right? So I think because of my ear, I was able to pick up the language fairly quickly. And then when I came back, because I loved it so much, I started teaching. I started teaching other adults who wanted to learn, who wanted that experience of being able to have a second language. And because that's what I love, I love being able to share that with people. And then children. So I've taught, at this point, I've taught as young as 3 years old all the way up to people in their 70s.
Three years old?
Yes. Yeah.
Gosh.
Yeah.
That's fantastic. Wow. So Thomas, how about you with your corporate experience? Do you find that you are able to use a lot of that in some of the characters that you approach?
No.
No? That was very good. Okay.
I think there's a pretty strong line between those two worlds, which I actually appreciate.
Okay.
I wanted to break free pretty badly when it was time to leave that environment. And I mean, I met some colorful characters, of course, but for the most part, they were very distinct worlds, which I think was another great thing for me, that when I left it and was able to really immerse myself in what I had wanted to do all my life, and I didn't even realize how badly I wanted to until I got into it, mm-hmm. and I felt free. I felt more authentic. I felt like I had found where I was meant to be, which was in the world of writing yeah. and performing. And so I'm very grateful that I got to do it, and I got to do it before I got too old. And I got to do it in New York City, which is a great breeding ground, wonderful training. But the other thing that's been really wonderful for me, when I moved up to my home in Coshecton full time, I was a little concerned that I wouldn't be able to find work up here. And that has been far from the case. I've become established. I've developed relationships. I became part of the ensemble cast of mm-hmm. River Rep. And I can do it because I want to, not because I have to. Right. So that frenetic need to find work, which is a part of so many actors' experience in New York City, and it was mine, thinking, I've got to make a new career.
Yeah,
I have to do that. And it was actually a friend of mine who's not a performer who suggested, do you really need to live in New York City to be an actor? I really didn't have to do it. And that was another excellent decision that somebody else helped me to make.
Yeah, it sounds like you had some good people around you, Tom.
Yeah. And there's wonderful opportunities to act up here.
Mm-hmm. So much happening, particularly this time of the season. But I want to go back to what you said, Thomas, because I would think that some of your leadership skills must have leaked into your ability to work with people, to speak with people, and to be a leader, and to be able to compromise. And I would think some of that might have leaked into your, whether you realize it or not, into your creative process as well. Yes, go ahead.
Can I just say, because I've had the pleasure of working with Tommy, that he is one of the most prepared and diligent actors I've ever worked with.
There you go.
So I don't know if he'll say that about himself. So I wanted to just say that so everybody knows that.
Thank you, Lexi.
And you're embarrassing him.
Yeah, blush.
Yes.
I agree with you. But I think that discipline of being in the corporate world and being a leader certainly helps. But I've actually found that I have to dial it back and remember what my purpose is, which is to be an actor, because I'll see things that may not be going as efficiently as they should. I'm thinking I could do a much better job. Not the River Rep. They're very professional at River Rep. But I have to remind myself, I am here to be an actor. That's what I'm paid for, if I'm getting paid. And so I need to concentrate on it. And that's actually been very helpful. It takes the burden off.
Yeah,
I do not have to plan the schedule for rehearsals. Even if I think I could do a better job, I'm not going to do it. I'm going to remember my role.
Well, if you're just joining us, folks, we've been talking with Lexi McEntee and Thomas Cambridge today, learning a lot about their life in the arts. When we get back, we're going to talk a little bit more about specific performances and shows that they're currently in, as well as Our Town, which is going to be happening over at the Tustin Theater this coming fall in October. So do stick with us. We'll be right back.
I'm Stephen Dubner. On the next Freakonomics Radio, former SEC Chair Gary Gensler had a front row seat for our last financial crisis. So does he think the AI boom could lead to another one?
I think that we have a stock market that is highly valued by any measure, and something has to give.
That's next time on Freakonomics Radio. Tuesday afternoon at 2 on Radio Catskill.
So here's the deal. Public radio is now operating without federal funding, and your support matters more than ever. One way to help is to donate that car, truck, or old motorcycle in your driveway. You clear out some space and help keep trusted news coverage alive in your community. The process? Simple, free, even tax deductible. Just head to this station's website and help us keep this work going together.
Donate your car, boat, or motorcycle at wjffradio.org.
And welcome back, everybody. If you're just joining us, we've been speaking with Thomas Cambridge and Lexi McEntee. two of the actors that are local right here in our community that many of you, I'm sure, have seen on stage. Today, we're learning a lot more about them, where they're from, what their process is, and what they're currently doing now. We did learn that both of these performers came to our area from different places. Thomas from Texas. You actually lived in Italy because you have two citizenships.
Yes. I didn't live in Italy, but I do have family still in Italy. So I do have Italian citizenship. But I grew up on Long Island, and then I spent some time in Paris, and then I spent a lot of time in New York, Brooklyn.
So what makes, we talked a little bit before the break about how much there is in this community art-wise, and I'm not talking about just theater. I mean, there's dance, there's poetry, there's certainly a lot of music. What is it about this community that attracts so many artists?
Well, I think the proximity to New York City certainly helps. I think I have seen after the pandemic that a lot of people decamped, relocated, and they decided to move here permanently. So I think, and for me, just the beauty of the area.
Yeah.
It's exquisitely beautiful.
We're so fortunate.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So it's like, what's there to not like about that? And if there's not opportunities, you can create them.
Yes.
And there's a lot of places that you can do that.
The community itself, it sort of breeds art. Once you become part of the community, it just feels like, wow, this is an incredible place to live. And the other thing, too, is like when you have your galas, or is it gala? People are supporting each other. So you go to that, gala, and you support that theater company, even if you haven't worked for them before.
Right.
You're there. You see them there. You see actors. I love that aspect of it. I love seeing Arthur Alesi supporting another theater company that's not River Rep, but he's supporting it because he loves theater, he loves the art form, and he wants to see that theater company succeed.
Yeah.
And that theater company wants to see River Rep succeed. Mm-hmm. You don't see that. I didn't see that. Again, 40 years ago in New York City, I don't remember anything like that. That's what I think is great about our community and our theater. Yes, Tom.
I think that atmosphere of competitiveness just isn't here.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Yeah, it's not. It's more working together, building together. And it's very supportive. It's not taboo to email Arthur or Chris Pedito and say, hey, I notice you're doing this show. Can I audition for it? And they say, of course you can. And that's the openness and the feeling that I get, you know, and I'm not even a performer here, but you folk are. And I love the fact that you collaborate that way. I do want to get now to, we're going to take a tangent a little bit here. It's Tom Gigas. You do work with this organization that I think it's very important to talk about. Growing Older Together. Many people my age and older, I'm 67 now, but many people my age can't get out, can't do for themselves, can't travel, can't get food in. Organizations like this are vitally important. Tell us how you became involved in Growing Older Together and what your role is in it.
So we support people 60 years and up.
That would be me.
In the Upper Delaware River Valley, both in Wayne County and Western Sullivan County. We have a fantastic brigade of volunteers. And essentially our mission is to help people to age in place, live in the homes that they love, as opposed to having to be forced or recommended to live somewhere that they might not want to live.
Yeah.
Like an institutional living situation.
Sure.
And aging in place is... that is the new tagline, I think, and it speaks for itself. And we provide independence, and that takes the form of transportation. Our volunteers use their own vehicles, so everything is private transportation. We go into folks' homes and do things that they used to be able to do but can't or shouldn't anymore.
Mm-hmm.
We help declutter. A lot of times people who have long lives collect things, and maybe they don't need everything they've collected over their lifetime, and so we can help them make sense of it, get rid of things. And we also do social visits because isolation is rampant when you live in a rural area like we do. As beautiful as it is, you have somebody who no longer drives and lives at the end of a lane, and they may not see a human face for 2 weeks until one of our volunteers shows up at their door. We also partner with a couple of organizations, the Cooperage Project in Honesdale and Tustin Social in Narrowsburg, to provide social gatherings that happen on first and third Thursdays in Narrowsburg, the second and fourth Thursdays in Honesdale. And Tustin Social and the Cooperage do all of the work. They provide the refreshments mm-hmm. or the luncheon. They get the programs, and it's open to anybody 60 years and up. We call them, the people we serve, our members. They do pay a small annual fee every year. It's $150, which gives them up to 2 services a week. But if that's a struggle financially, we can make arrangements to help people so that they don't have to pay that.
Great, great.
I'm also a volunteer because mm-hmm. I figured if I'm going to talk the talk that I should walk the walk, and I've met some amazing people. And I get to use my acting skills as well as my business skills. We are always looking for volunteers, Tom.
Yes. So we want to talk about that. So if there is a person out there, A, who needs the service or is yes. interested in the service, and B, who might want to volunteer, how would they do that? What is the website that they would go to?
So our website is growingoldertogether.org. We also have a hotline people can call. That number is 570-630-0509. And we have call managers who are on duty Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. to 4 p.m. Whether you want to be a volunteer or a member or just find out more information, it's all the same.
Talk a little bit about how satisfying it is to be a volunteer and to give in this way.
I believe that it is scientifically proven that volunteering provides a better sense of well-being. And, you know, gratification.
Yeah.
And just better health, like literally physical, mental health, it all adds to it. And I think there's a spiritual aspect to it. If you can connect with somebody who is in need and you can provide that need or at least lay in some way, make the situation better, it bounces back.
Yeah.
It's, I guess you could say it's good karma if you believe in karma, but I think it's just, quite frankly, I think that's why we're all here on earth, is to help each other.
Yeah. Do you find that the volunteers will often discover something unexpected about themselves when they volunteer?
Most certainly. There's always that aspect of compassion until you see somebody struggling. Maybe they live alone. Maybe they have a disease. Mm-hmm. Maybe they don't have any family. And we can't do everything. But even just filling a gap, and if you see a person's face light up, you know that you have done something good. And so there's no downside.
Yeah.
I can tell you a funny story. When I first started to work for Growing Older Together, I was also doing a show with Act Underground, another acting company in Narrowsburg, and we were doing a show called The Dog Walker, and I played a doorman in New York City who's just a horrible person. And I play lots of those, by the way, or I have.
Bad guys.
Yes, yeah. Bad guys, psychopaths, that sort of thing. And in this particular thing, he's the dog walker, is an elderly woman, and he doesn't like her, and he's actually gets physically violent with her. And a number of our board members who had just hired me to be the executive director for Growing Older Together came to the show and saw me roughing up this older person. And I thought, this doesn't, I'm wondering if I'm still going to have the job. Fortunately, they remembered it's just theater. He's just playing a role, but it was ironic.
But they're saying, where does that come from?
yes.
Again, if somebody wanted to volunteer, give us that website again, Thomas.
Yes, it's growingoldertogether.org.
Okay. Or call that phone number again.
570-630-0509.
There you go. It's just wonderful that you're doing that. I appreciate it. But Lexi, when you hear him talk about it, because you also have a way of helping people as well, both spiritually and physically.
Yeah.
But you describe yourself as a healer and also a bit of a psychic, right?
Yeah.
Tell us a little bit about that and how you help people in this way.
Well, it's actually, funnily enough, connected to acting, because I've always been hyper in tune with the feelings of others and what's going on with other people since I was young, right? So that's helped in acting, but it also was a dormant psychic skill that I've always had. And I've always loved helping people through problems, just talking to friends, helping them talk through things. And I just always knew the next step for them or what was in their way, or I didn't know how I knew, but I just knew. And so this has been like a quiet passion of mine for most of my life. And now I'm fortunate enough to get to work with other people to move them through or guide them through life in terms of what's in their way. Because I can see their potential. I can see the life that they're supposed to be living, of their most full, vibrant, expressive version of their life, right? Mm-hmm. So we work through some of that stored energy, that stored quote unquote trauma and to get them to have a more grounded, holistic, and integrated version of themselves.
Do you have a website too that you offer these services at?
Sure. Yeah, it's leximcinty.com. And on my website, there's a section for healing and you can see all of my information there.
Great. Let's talk now about Our Town, the show that's coming to the Tustin Theater this October, Thornton Wilder. What's so attractive about this play that it's done often by theater companies around the world? Well, give it to Lexi. Yeah. Who's playing Emily, by the way?
So many reasons. I think the first thing that jumps out to me is how genuine the characters are and how honestly and openly they speak without agenda and so truthful. I think it just that stands the test of time in combination with such great writing. I mean, it just makes something so watchable and you just want to watch these characters go through what they're going through because a part of you connects with that.
Yeah,
I think there's so much of what happens in that play that I think many of us relate to, especially because it's a coming of age play about a journey of an adolescent growing up and experiencing life and all of what that means. So I think many of us can relate to that in many of ways. And also it's not so over the top. It's very slice of life, right? And I think so many people obviously relate to that. And it's just a beautiful play that allows for connection.
And a lot of nostalgia as well.
Of course.
In the play. And I think that's what connects too with a lot of people.
Yeah.
And it is everyday characters. You were both at the table reading. You were playing Doc Gibbs.
Correct.
Also a pivotal role. How are you approaching this person?
Well, I have to admit that before we did that reading, I had never seen the play. I had never read the script.
Okay.
I knew that it was an important piece of American theater. And I was grateful to Greg for offering me the role, at least for the reading. But I didn't know that much about it.
Okay.
And so I didn't know anything about Dr. Gibbs. But just reading through it a couple of times, and then, of course, being with all the other actors around the table, and we had an audience, stuff comes out, and things that I hadn't thought about Dr. Gibbs, so I could really explore and make this a richer character, give him a background, give him a biography, and fill in things that are never going to be seen or spoken, but just they fill out the character. So when it's time to go on stage, you've got something that's interesting for people to watch and listen to.
That's an excellent point that you bring up about creating your character's history.
Yeah.
Because it does give us a presence. So when that character's on stage, but also when they're off stage, they still have presence there because that work was done, if that makes sense to you, that you feel like it's a real living human being as opposed to a character that's on stage. How important is that for you, Lexi? When you're going to approach Emily now, she has a very profound journey throughout. So what excites you about taking on that challenge?
Well, it's really an honor to get to play her because she's just a spark of life. When I think about the character in terms of how she's just like an open vein, like she's willing to share her emotions so honestly and purely. And as an actor, it's a privilege to be able to showcase that and show that to an audience, right? Be able to show that spark to an audience because it's really just so beautiful. And so with Emily, it's like there's this element of purity she has and this honesty and this love of life. That when I think of Emily, those are the things that come to my mind. And for me, working on the character, it's because I feel like all characters are within you. You just have to dig them out. What aspect of me is Emily, right? Like what aspects of myself bring those parts alive? So I think about those things.
Very exciting. So it's a big show and Our Town is coming to Our Town very soon in October. Do you know the dates offhand?
It's last two weekends
in October.
Of October.
Right. And it's going to be performed at the Tustin Theater. DVAA has a lot of history in this community and also a big, big supporter and advocate of the arts.
Yes.
All arts in our community. So it's all right here, folks. We're living it, and here are the two performers that bring us a lot of this great entertainment and great characters to our stages. By the way, folks, if you go to Thomas's website, there are links there that'll take you to some of the films that he has worked in.
Yes.
Give us that website.
ThomasCambridge.com.
There you go.
Yeah.
And some of them are on Amazon.
Yes.
You can go and watch them on Amazon Prime. And same thing with Lexi. If you go to her website, you'll also find more information about her work. Mm-hmm. Whether you want a French lesson, or learn more about her healing skills, or find out what production she's in next, where you can see her, all the information will be there on that website. So that's going to be it for today, I think. I think we've covered a lot of ground. It's been a lot of fun. I want to thank you both for coming out today.
It's been a pleasure.
Yes, thank you.
And there you have it, folks. Two familiar faces right from our local stages. And I think it's safe to say two people we know a little bit better now than we did an hour ago or so. What I love about my conversation with Lexi and Thomas, a.k.a. Tommy, is discovering just how much of what they bring to the stage comes from the lives that they lead away from it. For Lexi, that means writing and filmmaking, language, teaching, intuition, and healing. And for Thomas, it's a journey that's taken him from the corporate world to comedy, community service, and his work with the growing older together. Different paths, different experiences, but both ultimately finding their way back to the people, connection, and storytelling, and bringing it all right here to the stages in Sullivan Catskills, and beyond, quite frankly. My thanks once again to Lexi and Thomas for sharing some of those stories with us tonight. Always a pleasure having folks on the show come into the studio, as I've said many times, but these two are really great artists and really contribute a lot to our community. Now, speaking of stories, there are plenty more being told on stages throughout our region. So it's time for me to get out of the studio and hit the road once again, because here comes another episode of
The Roving Thespian. Thespian. Thespian.
And greetings and salutations. The Roving Thespian here today in Lake Huntington, New York at the Delaware Valley Opera Center. Today we're about to see Mozart's Magic Flute. And it looks like a sold-out house. And it proves to be a very exciting afternoon as people sit in anticipation of a very famous piece by Mozart. And you may recall that we had two of the folks on the show from the Delaware Valley Opera Center, Suzanne Dvorkin and Carol Castell, not too long ago. Carol, of course, directed The Magic Flute, and you see on the program that Suzanne Dvorkin is in the show herself. And the nice thing, we have a live orchestra today. Well, very, very exciting. So we're going to take it in and see what some of the audience members think of the show in just a few moments. We'll get some words. And I'm here now with Kathy Geary. Certainly people from WJFF Radio Catskill knows Kathy Geary from Now and Then.
Yeah.
Very famous show on Saturday afternoon.
You know, it's all about rock and roll and singer-songwriters. But there was a big part of my life that I spent as a classical musician, and I have sung opera. When you study in the university system, Mozart is the very first thing that you get. And at the end of your life, Mozart is going to be the very last thing that you will be singing. And you know, the Requiem, yeah.
Yes.
And Tom said to me, well, why is Mozart so special that way? The ability to write for whatever instrument he was writing for in the perfect melody, for, if it was a violin, if it was a flute, if it was a concerto, if it was a voice, he would listen to that voice, if it was a mezzo-soprano, if it was a bass, and he would write a melody that suited that voice. Where are the breaks? Where do you break into your high register? What notes are your strongest notes? When he would create a melody for specific voices, and it's never failed. After 200 years, it's still astounding, and I just love this opera. The Magic Flute's amazing.
Obviously you do. You mentioned that a young student studying opera for the
yes.
first time,
yeah.
they usually start with Mozart.
When you start with opera, usually you start with Mozart. The melodies are beautiful. Mm-hmm. They're easy to learn. But the thing that's tricky about Mozart is that he repeats the melody and he slightly changes it. Every time he repeats the melody, there's these slight differences, and those kind of details are what make artistry. As a more mature singer, you start to appreciate, well, what does that mean? It kind of changes the emotion a little bit. When I repeat this phrase, maybe I'm sad. Maybe I've discovered something, but Mozart has an amazing ability, and that's why since 1791 we are still listening to him today,
right
here in 2026.
And right here in Lake Huntington,
yeah, with
New York.
The Delaware Valley Opera, a professional opera company, right here in your backyard.
Very good. Thank you so much.
I'm so glad I saw you today. It's good to see you.
It's good to see you. We'll see you around the studio.
I'll see you at the studio, my man.
Bye bye. Thank you.
Yeah, that was fun.
So give us your full name to begin with.
Janice Meyerson, mezzo-soprano, and I have sung a few times with the Delaware Valley Opera.
In fact, we did see you just last month in the Mikado, but today you're here as an audience member, correct? So what did you think of the performances today?
I thought that a lot of the singers, one of them I'm looking at, Veronica Mack, and the Queen of the Night and the Pamina were so first-rate that you should just come to see them. The rest of the cast was good too, but those three were fabulous.
Absolutely right. It was a stunning performance by everybody. The sound in this building is incredible. What do you think of the building itself? Does that help as far as the acoustics?
I think it does. They used to be in the Tustin Theater in Narrowsburg, mm-hmm. which was smaller, and that was okay, but they've got a lot more space in here. And it was a full house. It looked to me a full house. And there's sort of modular seating in here so that they can change the number of seats. But it was nice, and it was such a charming evening. And the acting, I know that there's not a huge budget here to do the kinds of programs that they do with the Metropolitan Opera, but with what they have in this theater, they make the most of it.
They certainly do, and adding the orchestra this year as well is a brilliant move. It was absolutely wonderful to have that, I would think.
Oh, an orchestra is always wonderful to have, sure.
Now, Carol Castell directed this as well. She directed you in the Mikado just last month. What did you think of her use of the modernization of this magic flute?
I personally loved it. Carol really knows the stage. She will never do anything just for shock value. It will always make sense. And even if it's updated, like the costumes were really zany and updated and amusing and charming and delightful. And this wasn't updating like Euro trash updating. I used to sing a lot in Europe, and they just do things for shock value. Carol's always makes sense. And I think, and particularly in this production, it was just so bright and paced so well. It's just lovely.
Wonderful show. I want to thank you for taking the time to speak with me today. It's very nice to meet you.
Very nice to meet you.
Well, judging from folks I spoke with, the magic flute certainly worked its magic on the audience. By the time you're hearing this, unfortunately, Delaware Valley Opera Company's production will have taken its final bow for the season. But if our conversations tonight have left you curious about what you missed, the company maintains a full-length videos of its productions, all its productions, by the way, on its website. That includes, of course, The Magic Flute and their recent production of Mikado, as well as, I said, all the past productions. To learn more, simply go to DelawareValleyOpera.com. And with that, the roving thespian is back off the road, and I'm back here with you in the studio now. We still got a little business to take care of, if you will, before we turn out the lights on tonight's episode. We're going to take a look at what's coming up on the stages in and around our listening area. At the Forestburg Playhouse, Come From Away takes the stage August the 25th, that's tomorrow, Tuesday, through September the 6th. It's a story of strangers, generosity, and an unexpected community formed under extraordinary circumstances. Then Forestburg closes out its main stage summer season. Can you believe it? Summer's almost over. With the Tony Award-winning musical Once. That runs September the 8th through the 13th. Over at Shadowland Stages in Ellenville, Never Can Say Goodbye, the 70s Beehive musical, continues through September the 11th. I'm sorry, September the 13th. It's a musical trip through the sounds of the 70s, celebrating women and the music that helped define the decade. Venetia Playhouse changes things up on Saturday, August 29th with Love's a Joke, a two-show comedy event featuring Vicki Kuberman and Max Cohen, and it's hosted by Kendra Cunningham. At NACL Theater in Highland Lake, New York, Deep Space resident artist Raya El Chab presents Immortal, Rise and Fall of the Jarmak Battalion. That's on Saturday, August the 29th. It's a new work developed during her residency at NACL, and forgive me any of the mispronunciations of names. On Sunday, August 30th, Greenwood Lake Theater's Spontaneous Shakespeare Players head to the Sugarloaf Performing Arts Center with a family-friendly 90-minute A Midsummer Night's Dream, complete with fairies, confused lovers, and plenty of Shakespearean mischief. Those of you who listen to the show, we had Katie Weatherford on the show just last week, and we talked all about that Midsummer Night's Dream. If you like Shakespeare, which I'm sure you do, there's more Shakespeare coming in September. Sullivan County Dramatic Workshop brings its own production of A Midsummer Night's Dream to the Rivoli Theater in South Fallsburg, and that begins September the 11th. At the Tustin Theater in Narrowsburg, there's stand-up comedy. Mark Normand, joined by Matt Rugby, takes the stage Tuesday, September the 1st. There's music in the mix as well. At the Delaware Valley Opera Center in Lake Huntington, Arts Nest welcomes April, May, and the June Bugs. That's Thursday, September the 3rd. Then on September the 6th, the center turns back the clock to a Catskill summer with a live Dirty Dancing concert and dance featuring music from the iconic film. Also on Sunday, September 6th, at Farm Arts Collective in Damascus, Pennsylvania, my hometown, they present another Jazz on the Farm. Guitarist Will Celerand leads the Farm Arts All-Stars, joined by an impressive lineup of jazz musicians, for an evening of music at Farm Arts New Agricultural Center at the Willow Wisp Organic Farm. My thanks again to Alexi McEntee and Thomas Cambridge, a.k.a. Tommy, for joining me tonight and giving us the opportunity to, you know, discover not only the artists that we see on stage, but a little bit more about the fascinating lives they lead when the curtain comes down. And thanks, as always, to all of you for spending part of your Monday evening with me. I really do appreciate it. Of course, if you have any comments about the show, a suggestion for future conversations, or perhaps there's a theater artist or story you think I should know about, you could reach me at tom@wjffradio.org. And by the way, Radio Catskill now has a new app that you can download on your phone. It's the Radio Catskill app. You find it wherever apps are found. That means you can listen to this show and all the other fantastic shows on Radio Catskill anytime you want with a click of a button. I'm Tom Candela, and this has been Curtain Call, where I spotlight the magic of theater one conversation at a time. And until next week, see you at the theater.
Support for Radio Catskill comes from Tavern on Main, where modern American cuisine meets classic favorites. Dinner, weekend brunch, craft cocktails, and warm hospitality on Main Street in Jeffersonville. More at tavernonmainny.com.
Scott Simon, host of Weekend Edition Saturday here. And you know, I talk to a lot of people, and they tell me about politics and economics and about the law and math and animals and baseball, about how they wrote a mystery or composed a song. There's a lot to hear about in this world and a lot to learn. And we learn about it every Saturday on Weekend Edition from NPR News.
Saturday mornings at 8 on Radio Catskill.
Hey, this is Matt Hurtado. Join me for Virtual Soundscapes, your gateway to the best music in gaming. Classic tracks from the 8-bit era, modern releases, and interviews with the minds behind the games. Wednesday night at 9 on Radio Catskill.
WJFF Jeffersonville, this is Radio Catskill. Local news, culture, and NPR.